You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Remember, CrossFit works because it's constantly varied functional movements performed at relatively high intensity. What's been mistaken from day one of CrossFit is people hear that as constantly varied functional movements performed at maximal intensity. Mm. It is not maximal intensity. So it's not as hard as you possibly can go. That's not the way we train. That's not the way you get fitter and better. Mm-hmm. The way you get fitter and better is by training at relative to your physical and psychological tolerances. So if you're throwing up, you've exceeded that. If you're crying afterwards, if you don't want to go back, you've exceeded that. Yep. If you're sore for 7 days, you've exceeded that. So it's at high intensity. That's what gives us the potion. That's what gives us the potency. That's what gives us this amazing results from our training protocol.
We are here because we know the outcomes in our lives are within our control. That taking absolute ownership of how we eat, sleep, train, think, and connect with each other is how we'll optimize our health and happiness. That chasing excellence is how we grab hold of what is possible. Our mission is to live on the run. Always chasing, never stopping.
Hello, Ben.
Hello, Patrick.
Almost every episode, I want to say hello, Benjamin, but I know that's not your name.
Right.
Which is...
I don't think most people know that.
Yeah, I don't know how common that is, that Ben is not short for something.
It's because I was named after my grandfather, and his nickname was Ben. It wasn't Benjamin.
Oh, interesting.
His name was Urban, like Urban Meyer.
Not heard of that either. That's really interesting.
Keith Urban.
Yep.
But his nickname, everyone called him Ben. So I was named after my grandfather's nickname.
So you look at that.
There you go.
All right. Today, we did this a few episodes ago, maybe a month ago, the 2-minute drill. You asked for questions on Instagram. We got a bunch of really good ones. So I'm pulling questions from that round again. We will definitely ask for more questions when we run out of these, but we got a bunch of really good ones. So we're going to go through them again. 2-minute drill for those of you who are new is a handful of random questions. That I ask you, that you attempt to give an answer under 2 minutes.
Love it.
You've been getting better at that.
Challenge accepted.
As the last couple episodes. So,
by shortening the answer, talking faster.
Exactly. All right. So like I said, the questions are sort of random, but they're all pretty appropriate for what we usually talk about. First question, is heavy weightlifting or high-level gymnastics more important for everyday CrossFitters?
Heavy weightlifting.
Heavy weightlifting.
Should I expand? I guess I have another minute 50.
You've got some ceiling for that.
Okay. So for some disclaimers for that. They asked for heavy weightlifting or high level gymnastics.
Right.
Okay. And they said for everyday CrossFitters. So if it was fundamental, not heavy and not high level, my answer probably wouldn't have flipped.
So if just weightlifting or gymnastics.
So moving your body through space. The proprioceptiveness and the full range of motion and the coordination required in fundamental level gymnastics, push up, pull up, sit up, squat, handstand, things like that. Those would be more important than, because you can't do the heavy weightlifting without those. But for high level gymnastics, so backflips and pirouettes and freestanding handstand pushups versus being able to, and heavy is relative, but being able to back squat 400 pounds, being able to deadlift 450, being able to, press 200 pounds. I would take the strength numbers over the high level gymnastics for an everyday CrossFitter, because I believe that those transfer to everyday life better than that super high level coordination stuff. It's a really good debate, though. Yeah. I'm happy to debate that, and I probably could be convinced otherwise. But just in terms of those kind of further defining what we're talking about, everyday CrossFitters, heavy weightlifting, and high level, that would be my answer.
Gotcha. Second question. I have 4 kilos to lose. So obviously this is somebody in Europe. I have 4 kilos to lose. Better to do
about 9 pounds.
Yeah. Better to do a strict calorie deficit or focused on balanced macros.
Okay, so let's put some disclaimers for that so people understand. Strict calorie deficit is means just like not eating a lot.
Yep.
Whereas macros, for people that maybe that aren't part of the community or with that, that stands for like limiting your macronutrient numbers. So what's interesting that is the answer is going to be depends. But it depends on a couple of things. If you want to lose the weight really quickly, like just don't eat. Like you're going to lose, if you don't eat for 2 days, you're probably going to lose the 4 kilos. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of the way that works. Now it's not super healthy and you're probably gain it back really quick. The other kind of strange thing to this is your macros can be calorie deficit.
Right.
So just because you're doing macros doesn't mean that you're not doing calorie deficit. So the calorie deficit can be imparted into the macronutrient thing. So macronutrients are carbohydrates, fat, and protein. And what traditionally what a macro diet will do is give you a target number to hit for each of those. For example, a 180 pound guy might do 170 grams of protein, 200 grams of carbohydrate, and 110 grams of fat. From that, you could also do calorie restriction in that. So right. You just lower all of those numbers and now you kind of like would be sure to hit those things. But macronutrient by itself is not going to give you weight loss. The reason that the weight loss comes from the macronutrients is because it restricts you from overeating.
Right.
And whether that's overeating certain macronutrients or overeating period is up for debate and probably very individualized. So the kind of like shorter answer would be deficit if you need to lose it in the next few days, but it's probably not going to be a long. And if you want to lose it a little bit more systematically, smartly, it'd be macros.
Gotcha. Number three, at an older age, say 50, where would you suggest somebody start if they wanted to work on mobility?
Regardless of age, it doesn't matter. It's whatever the biggest limiting factor for you is.
Okay.
So having said that, there's three major areas, right? Which is your shoulders, your hips, and your ankles. Those are, the body kind of runs in mobility, stability cylinders.
Mm.
So think about from the ground up. So your first kind of area is, your first joint is your ankles. You're looking for mobility in your ankles. Next one's your knees. Your knees, you're looking for stability. Next one's your hips. Your hips, you're looking for mobility. The next one is your lumbar. Your lumbar, you're looking for stability. The next is your thoracic. So you're looking for, and so on. You get the idea, right?
Yep.
So the idea behind that is kind of the three major players are your shoulders, your hips, and your ankles. I would say regardless of age, it doesn't really matter about the age thing in there at all. If you have lack of mobility, where do you start? Whatever of those three is the biggest limiting factor for you. Now, I don't know how close we're getting to the 2 minutes, but I'll give you some really quick hitters.
Yeah.
Is shoulders. Focus on overhead.
Yeah.
You want to be able to, so it's like, well, what about shoulders? Is it like how far I can touch my hands behind my back? Is it, can I touch my hands behind my, one overhead and one behind, like you're taking off your bra and like that? Is it cross arm across your shoulder? Is it internal, external rotation? Focus on, can you really well achieve an overhead squat position for your hips? It is, can you get ass to ankles in a squat? Can you get full depth in a squat without—
Just regular squat width for feet?
Yep, so regular air squat. Yep. So like feet outside your shoulders, toes pointed slightly out, 1 and 11 o'clock, dropping down as low as you can. If you cannot achieve below parallel, we have issues. What we want to be able to do is get your butt to rest on your ankles without losing your lumbar curve. That would be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And then for your ankles, it's a matter of taking your shoes off, standing in front of a wall, a fist distance from your big toe to the wall without letting your heel come off the ground. Can you touch the wall with your knee? Am I describing that well?
Yep. Got it.
Okay. So it's drive your knee forward, foot flat. Can you touch the wall? If you can touch from your foot being a fist distance from your wall, that's kind of the pass fail.
Yep.
The A plus is like a fist and your thumb extended. To improve those things, it's anything from stretching to mobility work, whatever that might, self myofascial release to functional range of motion, like squatting, like pressing things over your head, like any of those things that might help.
Gotcha. Cool. Fourth one, how important are rest days? Should I listen to my body or do it every Thursday and Sunday? And I think the context for Thursday, Sunday is they're probably a comp trainer. And Thursday, Sunday is just when the program rest days are. So the question really is, if Tuesday I'm not feeling good, should I rest then or should I wait till Thursday?
Yeah. So there's probably two questions there. First one is like, how important are they? Right. Is that the same?
Yeah. How important are rest days?
Yeah. So very important.
Yeah.
Your body gets stronger. You get fitter as you rest and recover. When you work out, you're actually putting your body in, a deficit. You're getting your body worse, which makes sense. Like if you're going to do, a deadlift 315 pounds, your first one is stronger than your second one, which is stronger than your 10th one, which is stronger than your 100th. Same thing. If you're going to run, if you run 800 meters, you can hold a certain pace. Right. If you're going to run a mile, it's going to slow down. If you're going to run 10 miles, it slows down. If you're going to run 100 miles, it slows down. As you work, your body's breaking down. Only when you rest and recover do you get stronger, fitter, faster. So they're incredibly important. Yep. To answer the first one. So because they're so important, we're putting out comp train programming, or main site does 3-on, 1-off. Everyone's got their different protocols for what they feel is best for the masses. But it's for the masses. It's not for you. I don't know how you recover. I don't know how heavy this workload was for you. I don't know if you're also a bricklayer or if you also are like, you know, when you're not working out, you're getting massage and cryotherapy and all the other stuff. It's like, so the best thing you can do is listen to your body, .. As long as you're not a wimp.
Right.
Right. As long as you're not like, oh, I'm sore. And you're just like, you're not.
You use that as an excuse.
Yes,
to not
exactly. Yeah. Now I know that everyone's like, okay, so listen to my body. And then I say that and they're like, oh crap. So like, how do I know? That's why you get yourself a really, really good coach.
Yeah. Got it. Fifth question. How do you measure volume in games, athletes, programming? And whether that's barbell volume, conditioning volume, et cetera. How do you sort of make sure that your athletes are hitting sort of the right, the right intensity?
Okay. So there's a few things in there. So like, in terms of volume, the way we kind of measure that is, reps times load, but that's one aspect of it. Cause that's like, that's kind of traditional volume. That's like in strength world. It's like, sets times reps times load, right? It's just a math equation.
Yep.
If you do a 5x5 at 100 pounds, you're kind of lifting that 2,500 pounds. I think that, did that math right?
Sure.
Okay. So, and that's just the volume you're doing. Well, in our world, it's a little bit different, right? Because if you do Fran, that's only 90 reps at a very light load, but the time component puts in this other kind of variable, which affects recovery and all the other stuff. So that has to be taken into account. The way that I do it is a very macro level before I go to anything else, which is each one of my athletes does an approximate certain number of pieces a day.
Okay.
So they'll do their strength piece, then they'll do some accessory work, then they'll do their gymnastics piece, then they'll do conditioning, then they'll do their endurance work. And the athletes that can handle a really high level workload will do somewhere around 6 to 8 pieces a day. Whereas the normal person does one, right? Maybe two. You do like, you do your 3x5 back squat and then you do Helen, right? Or you do some strict pull-ups and some muscle up work and then you do Fran and you know, you get it. Our elite athletes in the games world are doing, you know, more of that 6 to 8 sessions per day. A lower day would be on that 4 or 5, and the higher days are definitely more towards that 8. And I think of each of those pieces and how much are each of those pieces going to take away from the other pieces. So if we're doing something like EVA, 150 pull-ups, 2.5 miles of running, and 150 heavy kettlebell swings, that's going to take a lot out of them if that's one of the pieces, as opposed to if another piece might be like, 5x5 kipping deficit handstand pushups. Like that's just not gonna take as much out of them. So you weigh and measure what is the volume, loading, rep scheme, intensity inside of each piece, and how many pieces are we doing? And together that whole thing builds out the volume protocol for the day and the week and so on.
Gotcha. I feel like that could be a whole episode if we wanted it to be.
That was probably over 2 minutes.
That's fine. What is your opinion on training so much or so hard that you get sick? And I think the question was sort of, to the classic CrossFit pukey idea of training to you.
Okay.
But if you took it another, if you think it could be taken another way.
Well, if it's taken the way I thought, then it's like, I don't quite get the question. So that makes way more sense.
Let's go with my interpretation then.
So if you're training so much that you you're training so hard that you throw up.
Yeah, that's how I took the question.
Okay, so to me, it's probably one of a couple different things. First is you're like that. We see this with a lot of high schoolers, and it's a nutrition issue. Mm. Their body is rejecting the food that they because you on the way after school you stop by the drive-thru and you got your happy meal on the way to the gym to train. You didn't realize you're gonna be doing Tabata hill sprints.
Yep.
Like, okay, guess what's going to happen? Your body's going to be like, get this food out of me. I can't deal with this. And you're going to throw up. So it's a nutrition issue. So fix your nutrition, both the timing of it. Don't eat within 45 minutes of your training session. If you have to because you're starving, make something really easy digestible, like a fuel for fire or a banana or something like that. Or it's you're literally just training so hard. Mm-hmm. We don't really see this with our super high level athletes, but we see it certainly with fit people trying to push the limits. To me, that they've gone too far. Mm-hmm. So as we said, you get fitter when you recover. Well, if you put yourself in such a deficit that it takes longer for you to recover than you should, remember, CrossFit works because it's constantly varied functional movements performed at relatively high intensity. What's been mistaken from day one of CrossFit is people hear that as constant varied functional movements performed at maximal intensity. Mm. It is not maximal intensity. So it's not as hard as you possibly can go. That's not the way we train. That's not the way you get fitter and better. Mm-hmm. The way you get fitter and better is by training at relative to your physical and psychological tolerances. So if you're throwing up, you've exceeded that. If you're crying afterwards, if you don't want to go back, you've exceeded that. Yep. If you're sore for 7 days, you've exceeded that. So it's at high intensity. That's what gives us the potion. That's what gives us the potency. That's what gives us this amazing results from our training protocol. The maximal thing is just like, I don't know where. It's a unfortunate misnomer that people have taken and run with. And I don't think people are calling it out.
Right. No. Yeah. I think that's interesting. Also, unrelated, but my friend and I used to go to McDonald's before basketball games and try to eat like 7 hamburgers. And then I wasn't very good at basketball. I think that was why. Now I'm learning so much. Okay. 7th question. How can you differentiate an activity that you really enjoy from one that sets you on fire?
Okay. First, I don't know if you need to, unless you're trying to really figure out some really targeted life stuff, right? But otherwise, like, you love it and you set you on fire, like, you're doing good stuff.
Right.
But here's the way I would do this. Because if you want to like try and find something that like truly sets you on fire, I know I've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. My take on it would be, when you're doing the stuff that you enjoy, are you thinking about the other thing?
Mm.
If you're thinking about the other thing, that's the thing that sets you on fire.
Yeah.
Right? So I realized this when skiing was my number one passion. I went to college where I could ski 5 days a week. And I literally did that. I worked on a mountain as a ski instructor during college. After college, I moved out to Lake Tahoe so I could then be a ski bum. And I came back to Boston, moved out again to Jackson Hole so I could be a ski bum a second time because I need to get my fill. So it was my passion.
Yeah.
When I started investing my life into coaching and CrossFit and I started skiing again, when I was on the chairlift, I would be thinking about coaching. I'd be thinking about running my business. I'd be thinking about getting back to the gym and mm-hmm. working out. And that's when I knew that's what sets me on fire.
Yeah.
It was this thing that I still enjoyed skiing, right. still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's not like binary. Yeah.
I'm thinking about this other thing.
Yeah.
Before, when I was skiing, man, that's the zone. That's the love. That's the path. Like, there is nothing else. You are in a white room in a vacuum and just, you know, excellence is oozing from your body because you're doing exactly what you love.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about other things, it's probably not the thing that's setting you on fire. And if you're doing that one thing that you really enjoy, but you never think about anything else while you're doing it, that's probably the thing that does set you on fire.
That's a great answer. I like that a lot. Today's episode is brought to you by Noble. I sat down with co-founder Marcus Wilson to talk with him about some of the ways the brand is chasing excellence. Thinking about Noble, thinking about where you guys have been and where you're going, when I ask, you know, what does chasing excellence mean to you and to the brand, what comes to mind?
Noble is a training brand for people who train hard and don't believe in excuses. Excellence to us is creating the best customer experience we possibly can through creating great products, by treating our customers the way that we would want to be treated, and by telling stories our customers want to hear. Noble products are not going to make you run faster or stronger or fitter. That's really up to you. We make products that perform the way that you need them to and that look good.
When did you guys first start conceiving of Noble? Was it 2014 or was it 2015?
So we launched in 2015. We started working on it a little bit before, but we've been living and breathing CrossFit and fitness and training, you know, all of our lives. So it's been kind of a lifelong passion that it's sprung out of.
So thinking back to those early days, what was sort of the central passion that you and the team was chasing in the days before success was likely, before anybody knew what Noble was, before you had a storefront, before you had 30 employees and growing? What was the fire that you guys were stoking, and why were you able to cross that chasm between passion and sort of realizing that passion?
So it was very much about excellence in ourselves, you know, as individuals. You know, why we train is to be better, right? So for me, it's about being a better father, a better husband, you know, a better leader. And it's super important. And we encourage everybody on the team to talk about kind of their excellence and what they're trying to improve in, and we encourage it. Here at Noble, we have team workouts on Tuesdays and Thursdays. One of the code of conduct is like, get out and train. Whether you're a runner, whether you want to go for a walk, whatever it may be, we have an environment that very much promotes health, wellness, fitness, and everybody becoming, you know, the best version of themselves. And that translates so powerfully into a company, because then, you know, if you're taking that outlook on yourself when you're working on a shoe design, excellence is at the core, and you think about the function and the fit and the way that things are going to work. If you're on the marketing team, you think about the story that you're telling and connecting with people in powerful ways about, you know, being the best version of themselves, trying to inspire.
If Noble had a superpower, what would that superpower be? And then how do you think it sort of represents itself on a daily basis here?
You know, Noble does not have a superpower. And for us, it is, we know we don't know everything. We actually embrace that. We're very curious, and we're okay with making mistakes. And we've made a lot of them. We learn from them, and we grow. And we feel like everybody on the team kind of has that same mentality. Like, we don't want anybody on the team who thinks they're a superhero. We want everybody on the team who recognizes that they're a work in progress, that they have room for growth, because that leads us all to better places.
If you want to learn more about Noble, you can do so at nobleproject.com/chasing. Eight, do you have any advice for someone transitioning from a six-figure high comfort job to coaching/business owner? I'm going to assume that they're opening a gym, but just that general idea from, I don't want to say cushy, but from cushy to sort of the daily grind of starting something new.
Yeah, and this might surprise him. I would say, why are you doing it? Like, are you sure? Like, are you? So you're saying like high earning and what do they say? Cushy comfort?
Yeah.
Comfort?
Yep. High six figure comfortable job.
Okay.
Yeah. So lots of money and it's comfortable.
Okay. So I would say like, just be weary of turning something that you enjoy and do something that you might not enjoy.
Yeah.
So right now you have this comfortable thing. Maybe you don't enjoy it, but it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, I'm really passionate about working out. But you might turn that into a thing that you don't enjoy. I've seen this where you don't enjoy it that much. Now, maybe it's the type of person that's like, I don't like comfort. I want to be challenged. I want to be pushed. I want that, the daily grind. I want that. Okay. And so for me, that would be a different answer. But the first thing I would ask is like, make sure you really want to do this. It's not because you enjoy the hobby.
Right.
Because if that's the case, like keep it the hobby. Like, just because you like golf doesn't mean you should own a golf course. Mm-hmm. Just because you like food doesn't mean you should open up a restaurant. Like keep those joys, your joys. You like going to the gym. It's your sanctuary. It's where you can get away from everything else. Right. Well, if you open a gym, that is your everything else. You don't get to get away from things anymore. Yeah. If you have decided that this is something that you're passionate about, your life happiness kind of like resides in this. And then my suggestion would be check out Ben Bergeron's Business of Excellence seminar.
Mm, for sure.
I would listen to this podcast. We talk a lot about excellence. We talk a lot about how to run an affiliate. And then I would reach out and try to make it to one of the seminars. Because this is basically everything I could possibly give you for advice. That's where I give it.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing that I thought about when reading that was whether it would be possible or smart to, before you change everything, change your lifestyle in such a way that you're living as though you are now running a gym and not as though your life is, high six figures in terms of just like understand what the sacrifices are going to be before you actually go and fully commit to mm-hmm. what that life looks like. Right. 'Cause that to me is, I think, probably as big a challenge as anything is like transitioning from.
You're talking about like from the income stream level.
Yeah. What is your lifestyle looks like? Where do you live?
If that's a really comfortable job, are you making, a really, really solid living working 9 to 5?
Yep.
Okay. And do you have a couple kids and you also coach soccer? Well, I think that we've talked about enough on this, but being an entrepreneur is not the 9 to 5.
Right.
There's that saying, which is entrepreneurs are the only people that will give up working 40 hours a week to work 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
Working 40 hours a week for somebody else to work 80 hours a week for themselves.
Yeah. And to make sure that comfort or that comfortable end of it isn't that you're okay with not being comfortable anymore, because that's what you're signing up to be uncomfortable for a while.
Yep.
Okay.
But at the same time, I want to give props to the person that like,
hell yeah.
It's a big leap and I don't want to like scare people away from it. This is part of my living is helping people make that transition. And I love people like that, right? Yep. Like that's a really cool question because it's a really cool person that's asking that.
Totally. Ninth question, is the rower or Concept 2 bike better in a class setting?
Okay. I don't even need to have to classify it in a class setting because it's, sure.
My guess is probably they were considering like
So if I'm going to buy five of them to run
and a how useful are, is yeah. one versus another. Yeah.
Okay. So, when I think about that, it's, the functionality of the movement, right? So functionality has a lot of defining characteristics, right? They're natural. Like they're not invented. Like the pec deck and at the gym, that's invented. Like nobody on the construction site, but nowhere in like sport or life do you see people kind of like doing that motion,
dancing. I think that's it.
Yeah. Right. So they're natural. They're essential. Meaning that if you don't have these functional movements, like you lose capacity of everyday life. They're found everywhere. Universal motor recruitment patterns. But the defining characteristic that matters the most is that they move large loads, large distance quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the bike versus the rower, I'm not talking about like if you were on a rower, you're on a bike, like, and you were to go for, 10 minutes, which one would go farther? Literally think about which is a bigger range of motion for your body.
Right.
So that matters, right? So, one, the bike is lower body only. Right. And it is a very small range of motion. Mm-hmm. Now, can you produce a lot of power through that? Yeah, you can. Right. But you can produce a lot of power through like little quarter squats, but we choose to do full squats because it's a bigger range of motion, more functional because of that. Whereas a rower, it's your total body. It's core to extremity, right? You're driving with your legs, then leaning back, then pulling with your arms. There's more coordination involved in rowing, mm-hmm. where the bike is a fixed movement pattern. So what I'm getting at is one moves large loads, large distance quickly, whereas the other one does not as much. The one involves bigger range of motion than the other. One is core to extremity, where the other is only lower body. So my long answer to that is the rower is a better means to overall fitness than biking would be. Biking still has its place.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one over the other, I choose the rower.
Yeah.
Which one is going to make you better at fitness? Which one's going to make you better at cleans and snatches and pull-ups and thrusters? And the rower will have more transferability.
Yeah. The only, given that context, the only benefit I think that the bike seems to have is that it's much simpler in terms of movement patterns. So there's no...
So that's another reason in a class not to do it.
Okay.
Because what you want to be able to do is teach people the right movement patterns that will translate to everyday life.
Right.
So if you're trying... Because otherwise what we do is be like, okay, let's not do squats. Let's get leg presses.
Right.
Right?
And it's like, right.
Imagine, imagine if we had 20 leg presses in the gym.
A whole different gym.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your snatch PR?
200 pounds.
When did you do that?
A lifetime ago. I probably like 2011, 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a period. Mine is, I think, 205. And it was at this very strange period where I was doing split snatches, which is the most fun movement you could possibly do. Even if everybody looks
it's
at you
so
like you're crazy.
It's so aggressive. Yeah. It's so like,
so
yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Okay, 11. How do you handle negative opinions on social media? And I know we've talked about that a little bit with that episode on vulnerability, but still interesting.
Okay. Well, with the discussion I had with you a few weeks ago, it's changed.
Mm.
Or actually, I should say it changed, but you helped me reframe it even better. So if you had asked me that a year ago, I would have said, I don't know about negative comments on social media because I don't read them.
Right.
And I didn't read them because I didn't want some outside force to disrupt my inner peace.
Right.
I felt like I could control certain things. And what I figured out back then was if I have 100 comments and 99 are positive and one troll says something bad, the 99 disappear completely and I fixate on the one for weeks and I can't get rid of it in my head.
Yep.
So I was like, this is insane. So I stopped reading comments altogether.
Yeah.
And I did that for a long time. In my head, it's years, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
I reframed that a little bit and got into reading comments a little more as I found out the power of engaging with the community, engaging with other people, and realizing that this is the business norm of today. Mm-hmm. And I didn't look at it as a negative. I looked at it as a positive and opportunity. And the negatives are still there sometimes and they still hurt sometimes, but I love the way that you framed it. I think you got it from somebody else.
Yeah, I got it from our friend Ian.
Which is... If people are commenting negatively, what that means is you've expanded past your bubble. If it's only your family if it's only your best friends, your family that follow you, you're not going to have any bad things, right? Well, if you get a little more following and now you have friends, families, and people that are interested and like you and trust you and want to emulate you and stuff like that, then it's a little bit bigger, but maybe you might get it. And then as you get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's almost like the ability to get negative comments is like a notch in your belt, like you've gotten somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The way I think about it is you've broken through the algorithm.
You've broken through the algorithm. Exactly. It's not, or the algorithm is now like, I don't know how, but it's working the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
You are getting more organic reach, or maybe it's organic is the right word. You're getting more reach than you would have otherwise. And you're getting the following where it's not just the diehards, it's the people's on the fringes that are now coming in, commenting and engaging as well.
Yep.
So it's a positive.
Yep.
Negative comments are a positive and a telltale sign that you're doing something well.
Right. When was the last time you had to slap the complaint bracelet? Maybe a little context to what the
complaint bracelet. Exactly. I was going to do that. So we have a white bracelet that we all wear. It's a complaint bracelet that if you complain, you snap it to like make you aware that you're complaining.
Yep.
So we have a threefold rule, which is never whine, never complain, never make excuses. If you break one of those, you snap the bracelet to bring awareness to, I'm doing it right now. Let's not fall in that perpetual slippery slope. of creating that contagious disease of complaining and drama. So it's a way to crack and stop. It's a vaccine against that stuff. So the last time I had to do it, I just got back from Africa, South Africa. And while I was there, there's three nights in a row where it was just really hot. And whether it was jet lag or I was unable to, for three nights in a row, I didn't sleep more than 3.5 hours consistently across all three nights.
Yeah.
So, and then the third night, I actually got 17 massive mosquito bites.
Oof.
On my face. I mean, it was insane. They were the itchiest things ever. And there was in your ear. And so the lights were on and I'm like hunting them down. It got so bad. Like it was, you know, 3:15 in the morning, but it's, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock back home.
Yeah.
So I actually FaceTimed Heather at 3 in the morning for an hour just to like, I watched a couple of movies at night and I didn't sleep at all that night. Yeah. So that morning I talked about the badness of the night.
Yeah.
And that's when I was complaining. I was also there coaching and training a couple athletes. And I was trying really hard not to, bring my drama and my issues to them.
Yep.
But I did. I can only be so strong.
Yeah. I mess with sleep. That'll bring out the worst in people.
I figured out like, I'm not good with three things. I'm not good with being tired.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good with being hungry. Unless I know I'm going to be hungry. If it's planned
that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm okay. If it's like, hey, I'm not going to eat until like a fast or something like that, which I've done. I'm okay with that. But if it's like, I'm supposed to eat and it's like, it's there and I can't or something like that. I'm not good with that.
Yeah.
Other people complaining, I fall apart. Yeah. I hate that.
That's
hate tough. It. And the biggest one is being late.
You being late or other people being late and you have
me being late. I can't, I really don't feel good about being late.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of situations like I'll clam up, I'll change who I am.
Yeah. The not eating thing, one thing that I found, cause I do a lot of sort of intermittent fasting. One thing I found that by doing that, when the days happen where like food isn't happening, like I'm less angry because I'm sort of normalized to it, even on the days that that are sort of unexpectedly absent of food. But I hear you on everything else.
The worst is when like you're running late for dinner when you're hungry and someone else is complaining about it. I should say the worst. I hate people when people, the worst. That's a big pet peeve of mine when people say, oh, that's the worst. It's like, that's so far from the worst.
Can you
let's visualize what the worst is.
We can come
is.
Up with the worst. I have the same thing about when people say,
I don't even know if we could come up with the worst. Like, try to visualize what the worst is.
It's just,
there's going to be something worse. Being dead is not the worst.
Being dead.
There's lots of things that are way worse than being dead.
That's true. That's another episode. Things worse than being dead. Does traditional bodybuilding have a role in CrossFit training? Dave Lipson would say yes.
Well, it's going to be depends. Are we talking about CrossFit training for who?
Right.
So my answer would be yes. Like, does it have a role? Does that mean like, could it have a space somewhere, anywhere? Yes. And the role it should play is, if you need to. So bodybuilding, the purpose of bodybuilding is muscle hypertrophy, which is increasing the size of a muscle. So if you really have an athlete that needs to get bigger and let's say that you have a guy, a good example, Chris Spieler. I used to train Chris Spieler. Yep. We used to do bodybuilding stuff with Chris because Chris was, I'm saying the number in my head and it's so ridiculous that it can't be true.
It can't feel right.
It was either the 120s or 130s. And
I think it was like 135, if I remember.
So I think he walked around at 135.
Okay.
But he wouldn't weigh himself because he didn't want to get down and depressed. So he weighed himself after his last CrossFit Games. And I think he weighed 129. Whew. Think about that. So ask him to push a 500-pound sled. Like, he needs to get bigger. He needs mass. So for him, we did bodybuilding stuff. So there's is there a place for it? Absolutely. If you're looking for aesthetics, that's what bodybuilding is. I mean, the word says it. Yep. You're building your body. If there's some sort of deficiency, it can help out with creating hypertrophy around a muscle. Bigger muscles don't mean stronger muscles, but bigger muscles have the potential to be stronger muscles because there's more cross filament fibers and all the other stuff. So there is a place for it, but it's not a place for everybody. Mm-hmm. Not everybody should be doing it, but because you're doing it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Last question. As an athlete, should I split up my strength and endurance training during the day?
Okay. So I need to know a little bit more information. Sure. So my first answer to that would be like, no, CrossFit is putting those two things together. Mm-hmm. That's why CrossFit works. Mm-hmm. It's not, I'm going to do my bench press and my squats and then go downstairs in the gym and jump on a treadmill for 45 minutes. Or even what other people do is Monday, Wednesday, Friday is my body part splits, and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday is my cardio. So it's not about the thing that makes CrossFit potent and why we get results is because we lift at high heart rates. And that's what elicits these amazing responses and this amazing physiques and everything else. So my first kind of answer would that be like, you shouldn't be splitting them up at all. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a competitor, I get it. And competitor also does additional strength work and additional endurance work. And then if that's the where the question's coming from, then the answer would be yes. The more you can space those out, the better. Mm. The more you can space out everything, the better. So
presumably because you're recovering more between each one and then...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So kind of like imagine running 10 miles, right? And what's the quality of those miles in miles 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Mm-hmm. As opposed to let's run 10 miles every hour on the hour, right?
Yep.
And now all of a sudden like those quality goes way up. So now most people don't do that because that doesn't work in everyday life.
Right.
So if you have the ability to break up the training session as much as possible, you're going to get more out of that as long as you're leaving enough time for recovery on the back end. Mm-hmm. So if someone's going to do some endurance work in the morning, we're going to do an hour of intervals or 30 minutes of interval work at the track or on a air bike. And then you're going to go to work or you're going to go to school or you're going to go do something else. And then you're going to come back in the afternoon and do some strength work. That's better than pushing both those into like a 3-hour session.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. That was fun. And I think we're probably a little over 2 minutes each one, but still good. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you once again to today's sponsor, Noble. Visit nobleproject.com/chasing to sign up for early access to new products. You can get every episode of Chasing Excellence wherever you listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. Until next time. Thank you for listening.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.